Okay, welcome everyone to Wise Talk. This is Mariposa's monthly leadership forum, and we've started this on video now for the last couple of months, and which is more exciting. It used to be, we did 15 years on audio, so we're excited to be back again this month, and we have Sonia Lane Gartside with us, who's in Pittsburgh at the moment. Thanks for being with us. Let me tell you a little bit about Sonia. She's dynamic, we can already tell. Your bio says you're dynamic, and you are. Okay, awesome. And very results-oriented. She's a global consultant, educator, and facilitator in leadership development and change management. She is the author of the new book, Workplace Anxiety, How to Refuel and Reengage. Sonia helps professionals to become stronger, more effective leaders, and solve their biggest people-related pains, dysfunctions, and challenges. She has been developing and implementing customized training and executive education programs for the past 20 years. As a coach, Sonia helps her clients' strengths to improve performance. She holds a bachelor's degree with honors in management studies and a master's in education from the University of West Indies and Barbados. She holds advanced certification in change management from, is it PROSCI?
PROSCI, yes.
Okay. And is also certified as a master trainer, online instructor, case writer, and instructional designer. She currently works with C-suite and senior leaders in Fortune 1000 companies to design leadership programs for managers and high potentials and to get their employees to embrace needed changes by designing and implementing change management strategies and plans. All right, so your website is soniagartside.com, and that's Sonia with S-O-N-I-A. Mm-hmm. And our LinkedIn is Sonia Lane Gartside. You can find her. And is there a Twitter? Do you have a Twitter at all?
Yeah, you don't want me on Twitter. More Instagram, which is Sonia Gartside.
Okay. All right, so go to Instagram. All right, we got it. As I've done this for 15 years, Sonia, and I'll say, ask you the same question I ask everybody else, which is, you know, I read your bio, and that's great, and it sounds like you've had a really interesting journey, but I want to hear it from your perspective. Like, tell us, personalize a little bit, like, how did you, for example, get from Barbados to here? You know, tell us a little about your background. Tell us a story.
Tell us a story. Well, yeah. I'll tell you a story, definitely how I got here.
Okay.
And it has a lot to do with why I wrote the book to begin with, because as you can tell from my accent, I'm not originally from the US. I'm from Barbados, lovely island in the Caribbean. During COVID, they're giving you a 1-year visa for you to come down and work from, you know, the beach.
Oh,
if anybody
nice.
Wants to go okay. down there. And yeah, my life and career was there. I worked in education, predominantly online education. How do you bring, because the Caribbean obviously has about 15 islands and the University of the West Indies where I worked, served all those islands. I worked in the School of Business, figuring out how do we get education towards the leadership teams around the Caribbean, particularly in the Eastern Caribbean. And so I moved here about 13 years ago when I got married. And when I moved here, I left everything I knew behind, my family, my friends, my job as research director at the Cave Hill School of Business. And I came here and I only knew one person, which was my new husband. So talk about uncertainty, talk about anxiety, talk about, you know, giving up your life to really move to a state that you don't know anybody,
right.
town that you don't know anybody. You know, right. I lived it and I became intimately involved in what it means to pivot, what it means to be uncertain. How do you move out in those situations? Now, I've been doing that for years as from my employment area, but it really hit home when you take what you've been teaching and what you've been
right.
trying to build skills in from a professional point of view, and then utilize them for your personal work. So mm-hmm, that's mm-hmm. a big, I think, reason I wrote the book, because I thought, oh, well, I tested out all of these and they definitely work regardless of whether you're professional, whether you're personal. I have got to sit, put this process down in a book so people can utilize it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's a personal story about
me. That sounds great. So what prompted you to write the book particularly? Were you noticing things in your work that, I mean, there's a lot, obviously lots of things to talk about with regard to, we have the same kind of work, so lots of things to write about. So how did you decide on workplace anxiety? That's that very small subject.
Right. Well, you know, as you can tell, well, who am I? And usually I say to people, I'm a master trainer, I'm a certified coach, I'm a strategist. I'm a change manager. I'm an executive coach. And all of those things have one thing in common: people. That's what I deal with. How do you get people to be their best selves? And so I work with professional, you know, leaders to help them achieve their goals by generally improving the performance of their people and the systems they're working. Mm-hmm. And so obviously what I'm intimately familiar with is anxiety, because to do any of those things, you have to help people through the feeling. So when it comes to training, how do I build skills and get people to change behavior? You have to oftentimes go through a little bit of anxiety when people are doing that. When I'm doing a change project, how do you get people to adopt and embrace a change and not engage in workarounds? I have to deal with their anxiety. When I'm dealing with executive coaching and I'm helping people to get to accomplish their goals, the first thing I have to deal with is what's stopping you. And what's stopping you oftentimes is a lot of anxiety, a lot of fear, a lot of doubt. And so it's something that I come into over and over again. And so I think it really just highlights what I've been working with for the past 20 years for my career. And then when I moved here, and then I said, all right, Sonia, you've been telling people all these things for quite a long time, and this is the most uncomfortable you've ever been, because you've given up what you know for sure. People know who you are, to come to a place where no one knows who you are. And now you have to rebuild. You have to start over.
Right.
That was the impetus that says, okay, write it. But definitely I deal with it every day in my working world.
Sure. So you wrote the book, I assume, last year. I mean, you know, usually when we write books, they're not published until a year or so later. So when did you actually finish the book? Last year sometime?
Last year.
Yeah.
And, the publishing process.
Yeah. So way before COVID. So let's start with the uncertainty. I mean, there's just sort of layers of uncertainty here. It's like, you know, at first people thought that we're going back to work in 3 weeks. And I'm like, probably not. Then, you know, they thought, okay, we'll be going back to work in 3 months. Probably not. So, you know, we still don't know when we're going back to the office. Some companies are not going back to the office at all. Mm-hmm. People are letting people stay home forever, or stay wherever they want to stay. It's like work from anywhere. It's not work from home anymore. It's work from anywhere. Barbados, Hawaii, whatever. Yeah. So how what are you seeing with people in terms of their anxiety around uncertainty? So what are you seeing first? Let's talk about what are you seeing, and then let's talk about what you're suggesting to do in terms of what people can do about it.
Well, what are you seeing is it's a major change that most people are unprepared for. There's a lot of discomfort. And when that happens, you know, the amygdala takes over.
Right.
The part of your brain that deals with uncertainty and fear.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And generally what happens is people start to operate out of that fear and that anxiety. So what they tend to do when they see change and they see this uncertainty is they try to seek safety. And in safety, what they do is they retreat into themselves, safe grounds. And what I try to say to people is you have to look for opportunities. This is a time for growth. This is a time for you to get out there and not simply seek what safe retreat, because this is what is needed in order to navigate uncertainty. Because if you spend a lot of time looking for threats, which is what people do during uncertainty, they look around and look for threats and seek safety, you're not going to be able to capitalize. You're not going to be able to thrive. You're not going to be your fullest self. And so what I say to people is that you have to develop the system that says, when I see uncertainty, when I get anxiety, first of all, how do I deal with discomfort? Do I know I'm under discomfort? Because sometimes people are anxious, people are uncertain, and they just think they're lazy or they're not productive. And I have to say, no. You're not lazy or unproductive, you're just anxious, because these are anxious times. So it's completely normal for you to feel that way. And so we have to figure out how do you deal when you're feeling that way, so that what you can do is go out there seeking growth and seeking opportunity. And so that's mostly what I focus on with people, help them identify the uncertainty, the impact it has on them, because for different people, it looks different. For some people, they can't think. Some people, they can't sleep. Some people, eat a lot. You know, they self-soothe rather than self-care.
COVID-19 is a reason. Yeah, COVID-19, eat a lot. So I guess what I get when I leave it more specific. So what are you seeing as far as the specificities around, let's take some of this stuff. You know, you mentioned COVID-19, like I'm being funny about it, but I mean, people are, you know, not exercising as much because they're sitting on Zoom all day. So what are you suggesting? Let's take that one. What are you suggesting as far as, what are some of the tips you have for like exercise, getting outside? I mean, especially coming into the winter months, it's going to be harder to get outside. I mean, I was out, I had a friend last night. I just got back from Hawaii, had a friend last night in my backyard, obviously to stay safe. And we were freezing our asses off. I mean, it was freezing. And we had like blankets. She had a hat on. This is like, it was only like 55 or 53 or something. But it was like, she had a hat on, she had a scarf, her mittens. I'm like, we're laughing. Like, this is ridiculous. Like, it just is.
It is ridiculous. Yeah.
But it's safe. And you know, people are gonna get sick of that. They already are. I mean, like, we're already seeing surges because most people are coming indoors, and it's gonna get worse as the winter comes. Mm-hmm. We're not even in winter yet. So what do you suggest for people to do as far as quelling that part of their...
For themselves or for them as leaders? Which one? Individually or...
Well, I mean, they could be models. They should be being models, right? As leaders?
Being a model. Well, as a leader, I always say to them that, first of all, you have to take care of yourself first. So you have to figure out how to deal with it before you can help other people deal with it. And so I always say lead with empathy, starting with yourself. And recognize that people are not just working from home. People are at home in a crisis trying to work.
Yeah.
And so you have to, and they're doing it via video collaboration and video meetings, which as some person who deals with online work, it's more tiring on you. There's a reason why after a full day of sitting down and watching Zoom meetings, you're exhausted at the end. Yeah. Because it takes much more mental focus and health. And so what do you want to do is to really establish team norms that drive that empathy, you know, empowerment and engagement. Because one of the things that once you move to a virtual world is you want to ensure that you're reducing the distance that people have for you. And so you, as you say, lead by example. So the first thing you want to do is to really practice getting the energy and the engagement needed to do what is required of you. So you have to give people time to exercise, take a break. So don't plan back-to-back meetings. Actually start, you know, the first 5 minutes of a meeting, I say the first 1 to 5 minutes of a meeting, start to touch, get, you know, this is a touch spot for you to figure out how people are feeling, how they're doing, you know, so that you get a sense of what your team is going through and people get a chance to build connections. The next thing I would say is, you know, have sessions online just where you don't discuss any work, where people can just talk and people can do things. Have, you know, group sessions where you talk about, hey, let's all do a walking exercise. You see how far, if we get, how quickly we can hit 10,000 steps in a day or 100,000 steps in a week. You know, have certain things like that lead towards giving people chance to just get outside for at least 30 minutes a day, because you really want to prepare your body to get energy to come back inside and do the work. So that's the first thing I would say, lead with empathy, start with yourself and start engaging and helping people to, first of all, reduce that distance so that people feel connected.
I like that, reduce the distance. But let me stop for you a second, because we've been at this for 8 months now, or more than 8 months. What are we at, 9 months? Whatever. We're at a place where we never thought we'd be. So I'm noticing that people are just getting, I don't want to say lazy, because that's not the right word. They're getting in this groove of just staying in front of their computer. You know, it's like they have to make themselves go outside. And I'm not even talking about exercising. I'm just talking about going outside. I'm just talking about getting vitamin D, which is actually really important during COVID. That's a whole nother issue. But like, just get outside, especially if it's sunny out. Like, what are you suggesting to people to motivate them to get it, that they need to take breaks, they need to get outside, they need to like put it in their calendar? I mean, like, is that it? Or
first of all, they need to get off autopilot.
Yeah.
So many people, and it's easy to just fall into autopilot, you know, where you are just doing the same things over and over again, just following that groove that has been established all the time. So I say to people all the time, get off autopilot. You have to make a decision. What do you want to go? Where do you want to be? And then the what is the lifestyle that supports that? And the lifestyle that supports where you want to go tells you that you need, even if you don't feel like it, feelings aren't facts, that you have to make a decision as to what do I want to do. So I need to figure out what's the energy and the engagement I need in order to do it. So for like me, for example, I would sit in front of my computer, I will look outside and I would see, oh my goodness, it looks a little cloudy. I don't like that. So what do? I book a trainer because I don't want to pay him for not showing up. So that gets me out through the door. I go moaning and like, oh my God. But then I think, my God, I spent too much money on this. I have to get out. And that's the purpose behind him, because that's my way of motivating myself. And so everyone has to get off autopilot and then look for the systems, the rituals that will cause them to do something that they know is important, but you really don't feel like you want to do.
That's right. I mean, I don't think anyone's going to argue that we need to get outside. I mean, I don't, there's nothing to argue about on that, except that it's what you're saying, this autopilot. You know, one of the clients that I have at the very beginning of COVID, he was so astute, and I still believe of all the advice I've heard, all the things that people are doing, this is still to me the best advice I've heard. It's not even advice, it's probably it's a practice that he did at the very beginning. He has a team of 200 people at a tech company, and he said, we're going to have meetings on video from 9 to 12 and from 2 to 5 in Pacific time, because they're a Pacific company. Okay. That's it. That's all you got. You got meetings from 9 to 12 and 2 to 5. That's 6 hours, right?
Yeah.
So the in-between time from 12 to 2, you take care of your family, you go to eat lunch, you go outside, you do whatever you need to do. Walk your dog. I mean, obviously he's trying to like get them to do exercise. So what do you think about that idea?
I like that idea. You know what I like about it is that the leader is establishing the system in which employees can do it. Yes. And if you are a leader who have that type of authority and that power, I encourage you 100% to do that, to really say to people, hey, I'm doing it and I'm going to give you the time and the space in which to do it. I'm going to create an environment in which you can do it. And that is absolutely 100% what I would encourage. However, for most people, and you know, when you start with the beginning of my book, I say the start of my book says that you are 100% in control of you and your career. Do not walk into an organization expecting people to motivate you. Do not walk into the organization expecting that people will take care of you and your career. You have to do it. And so while I love that, I think a lot of people don't have that. They still have people who still don't understand what it is to take work from face-to-face to online. They don't realize that there's a training that you need to go through to prepare for that. To, you know, there's different ways of operating. And so people still have that demand on them. And so that's why I say get off autopilot, figure out what works for you, be interested in you, and figure out what do you need to be empowered and engaged to do what is required of you. And so if for a lot of people, it's not hurting bad enough. They're tired, they're fed up, but it's not bad enough for them to actually do something about it yet. But at some point it will get to, and that's where people start to make a decision. What's good for me? Where do I want to go? What's the lifestyle that is that works for me? And it's different to different people, but what they start with is a decision.
This
can't continue.
You're right.
Now,
for sure. In any habit or ritual, I mean, you speak of rituals, and there's a great, I'm sure you've read the article by Tony Schwartz on managing your energy and not your time. And I mean, it's like, I give that article to everybody I know. I think it's 15 years old.
Very relevant.
Very relevant, especially now. And I love the idea of managing your energy, not your time, because we all are like time management and all this stuff. It's like, but it's about, especially right now, it's about your energy. Let's stop.
It's about your energy.
Totally. Let's stop a second. And is there any, you are interested in asking a question to Sonia? Please just basically go off video or go on video and off mute and just jump in. Who would like to do that? You get brownie points. Somehow we'll send you, we'll figure out something. Anybody have a question?
Hi, this is Kathy.
Kathy. All right. Hi.
In between a question and comment, I guess, as I am a manager of a team and we work employee benefits. So right now it's middle of customer service season as people go through open enrollment, and I feel like we have to be available a lot for our clients, because in the consulting world, they sometimes dictate when they need you more than the other way around. We have told people to take care of themselves and do a lot of the things that you've said, which is great. The one thing that struck me of what you said is, I don't remember who made the suggestion of if making it more of like a leadership, mandate, or putting some rules around it versus letting everybody do what they need to do for themselves, because they're not. We give them all the permission in the world and then they don't do anything for themselves. So I don't know if there's any, that's probably the comment side, or if there's any suggestions that you have to not be as strict as saying, you know, between 12 and 2, you can take the time for yourself, which I think if we did that, I'd give people better permission, but I'm not doing that. I'm saying take whatever couple hours you need in the day for yourself. Mm-hmm. But again, how do I get people to do that? Including myself. I know we're supposed to start with ourselves first, but I take the beginning of the day and the end of the day because I have a child and I have daycare pickup and drop off responsibilities. So I take my time when I do it, but I can't do it in the middle of the day.
Mm-hmm. And well, so...
And just real quickly, I mean, that's nine to, there's still time at the beginning of the day, the 9 to 12. So there's still time, you know, in this scenario, just so you know, he just put that in there so that there's flexibility on both ends and in the middle. Go ahead.
So I think that's really good. So you're walking a path of where you don't want to take away agency from your employees, allowing them the freedom to determine for themselves, and where you just want to ensure that they understand that you really mean it. Because quite frankly, organizations say, we have this policy, and everyone knows, no, they don't really mean it. You know, they'll say, oh, you can take time, and then emails and bombarding you or stuff like that. So I do agree that it's really good to say, all right, how do we do this? I tell people, I say at meetings, tell people how you take time out. So don't just say, hey, you know, it's important that we take time for ourselves. And for example, I take time by doing X, Y, and Z. How do you take time? That's a great 1 to 5 minute way of opening a meeting or ending a meeting to help to really send a signal to people, we mean what we say here. Secondly, you can make it a group exercise. You can say to people, hey, you know, one of the ways I wish we can engage and bond together, given that, you know, it's COVID and we're so distant, is really figuring out a way where we can do something together. Is it online? Like I see some companies have online yoga or, you know, Pilates, or they do steps, you know, where they compete. So put out a suggestion to your team as to what's one thing that we can all engage in and really help with. Some teams deal with cooking healthy or no sugar November. There are different, so many different ways they can come together in which you can start to get people energized and engaged and bonding with each other, where they still retain agency and they still have a feeling as in, yes, you're not forcing this on me, I can participate. And of course, don't make it mandatory. Allow people who want to sit in front of the TV and binge watch a show and eat chips to do so, because that's their right, you know, as long as they're producing. That's what I would say.
Kathy, you have a follow?
Oh, no, thank you. Yeah. I want to binge watch TV and eat chips or ice cream, rather.
But yeah,
haven't done that yet.
Yeah, I always say to people, just explain, there's a difference between self-soothing and self-care, because people have a lot, and you know, when there's uncertainty, what do you experience? You experience discomfort. And what do we say for people, you know, you can do hard things, you can go through discomfort, but what sometimes happens when people meet the discomfort of uncertainty is they drop into self-soothe. So where they do temporary things that make them feel better temporarily, you know, like go for a manicure, or drink some wine, or binge watch a show. And there's nothing wrong with that, is which what I like to explain to people. The problem occurs is where you do it all the time. It doesn't solve your problem. So then that's where you start to overwatch TV, or, you know, overshop, overdrink. So self-soothing needs to be temporary, so that people do not just descend into it and solve no problems and it just get worse and worse. Where you want to send people to say, go to self-care, which is when I'm feeling really anxious or I'm feeling tired, I take a nap or I go for a walk or I meditate or I journal or I I take a class on, or I sing, or I use, a hobby. Those are the things that you really want to encourage people to do. And I think once you explain to people the difference between self-soothing and self-care, they start to pay attention and say, okay, I'm self-soothing here. It's okay for short periods, but not long-term.
That's a really great point. Thank you.
I like that a lot. Yeah.
Another thing that I would say is also, as a leader, is that you want to reduce the chaos in the environment. It's chaotic. Mm-hmm. Especially during COVID, when you're not sure what's going to happen. And so try as much as possible, because people immediately seek certainty to give them something they can hold on to. So you may say, I don't know where we're going in the next year, but let me tell you where we're going in the next month or the next week. And so people have a vision of where they're going, and then explain their role in, this is the role that you're going to play. This is why it's important for us that you're focused at this time, and really recognize how their disparate roles come together to really create, the end result of where you're going in the next week or the next 2 weeks. So temporarily just give people a sense of safety by ensuring that it's not chaotic, and that, where people don't expect you not to be anxious. People know that you don't know what's gonna happen in the next year or in the next 6 months because things are changing, but they're still looking for you to say, hey, here's some security here for the next week of what we're going to
do. If you don't, if there's a change, everyone's going through some sort of change. It could be communication, it could be pivoting your, marketing strategy, it could be, there's some sort of change going on. And the more you can talk about the change, even if you're right, even if you know it's coming down the pipe and you don't know that much about it, there's something you know. So talk about what you know within a week, or what you know is going to happen in the next 2 weeks. And you don't know what's going to happen in a year. But I think that that's really important. I think people want information, and they want to make things that are uncertain as certain as possible, even though we know that we don't know. We can say, oh, yes, we're going to have a vaccine. Everyone's excited about the vaccine. It's like, well, it's going to maybe be another year before we all are vaccinated in the United States. And I'm talking about the United States. I'm not talking about the whole world. Just the United States.
Exactly.
Okay. Like, it could be a year. Like, and it's not going to happen tomorrow. Like, the essential workers will, maybe health workers will get the vaccine, but it's going to take months for all the rest of us. Okay. So things are not going to just go back to normal once we even get the vaccine. So what does that mean? And so I think that these kinds of things we need to be talking about as leaders, so that people can hold on to something, right? That you're starting to get into some other things I want to talk about. It's still sticking with this process of establish that anxiety is caused by many things, but right now we're talking particularly about it's caused by uncertainty. And that's kind of what's up right now. There's just so much uncertainty. We still don't have a president-elect officially. It's getting closer, but as an example, that's a big issue in terms of uncertainty. That causes markets to change and businesses to change and respond. So that's causing problems as well. So given that anxiety, we've established anxiety causes us, uncertainty causes us anxiety, and there's only certain things we can control. We've talked about the idea of exercise. We've talked the idea of connection. You mentioned a few things. Are there other things that leaders can do in your mind that you've seen to continue to establish that connection?
Continue to establish the connection?
Yeah, and to stay, as you said, as close as you can to people, even though in some cases you can meet people socially distanced and have walks and things like that. Maybe when it's snowing, but can do this in some places in the United States. And I am obviously talking about the United States right now. So have you noticed and have you, come up with or noticed what people are doing as far as establishing connection, continuing that connection, establishing and also continuing it? Because it's not like a one-time thing. Like, mm-hmm. How do you continue to find out how people are doing? That kind of stuff.
Okay. So let me go out and then come in. So going out, what tends to work is the mindset, first of all, that you want you and your people to have, which is that we can push through this fear, we can look for opportunities, we can succeed even though we're in discomfort. So we're getting comfortable with being uncomfortable. because the first thing people do is reject the uncomfortable feeling. And you want to say, no, we've been doing this for almost a year now. Get comfortable with being uncomfortable. And generally, I find entrepreneurs are very good at that. They're very good with uncertainty because they usually operate COVID or no COVID with the understanding that at any point, in order to get any income, they have to go there and make it. And there may be a day where they can't make it. So they're comfortable with that uncertainty. So I would say you have to start building that mindset when we talk about entrepreneurial, that mindset within the organizations, that we get comfortable with being uncomfortable, succeed through fear. And then we talk about this now, where we talk about the connection is talking about what are the skills and behaviors that go with that mindset. And definitely number one is to build that critical infrastructure around which you can be resilient, that you have grit, that when you're, knocked down, you can get back up and go again. And so one of the ways of doing that definitely is to have connection, is to really set up, help people to set up for, because generally people are not set up to work from anywhere. I am accustomed to working from anywhere. So the transition for me is not that major, but for most people, it's difficult. You know, they're sitting at the kitchen tables or they're sitting in coffee shops.
And in their bedroom.
In their bedrooms. Then yeah. They realize my back is hurting. How comes I am not? They're trying to sit and conduct business next to children. And so empathy is one of the biggest things to say to people, I get it. I understand it. We can do it. And help people to, and give people little tidbits or little, start the meetings with how have you arranged your setup lately that is really good. I help people to share best practices. I say the number two thing is to really have one-on-ones. Yeah. One-on-ones, research just generally proves, particularly in this sort of, working connection right now, that one-on-ones really help people to establish priorities. It helps them to prioritize. It gives them a safe space where you can build trust and they can really tell you what they need so that you don't have to worry about someone that doesn't need worrying about. So you can really, and you can customize how you respond to people, how you build a connection with people, because the way you still connect with, you want your connection is not the way I would want to be connecting with you. So those one-on-ones help really tell you how to connect with people and have it personalized. And then really be there to give people positive reinforcing talk, to say you're doing a good job. You know, when you switch to online or distance remote working, it's all transactional. Your productivity is really based on have you delivered, right, as opposed to when you're working face to face. There's a goodwill building with talking and explaining. When it switches to online, it's really transactional. It's like, did you show up when you said you were going to show up? Did you deliver the project when you said you were going to?
Assignment.
Yes. Cool. So what you really want to do, therefore, is to start to engage in that personal connection by giving people good feedback when they've done something well. Hey, I saw you, submitted that document and it was done really well, given that so for example, Janine sits down next to her two kids who are doing online work. She submitted a great proposal. You can say, great proposal that you just submitted. And I know you did it with your kids next to you. So that makes it even better. That builds a connection with, Janine to say, okay, the work that I am doing, first of all, it makes an impact and someone is appreciating it. So those are the good ways in which you can, I think, maintain that connection. Mentally.
Right. I want to pick up on that because you mentioned this whole idea I call it assignments. You talked about work and it's true. It's like people are churning out transactional work. Like they've never, in school they are. I mean, all my kid is doing, he's in high school. It's like, he's got like 18 assignments a week, like three in each class or something. It's like, he's just turning it out. Like, okay, like 5 minutes for this one and 10 minutes for this one and 2 hours for this one. And some the other day, one of my clients said to me, like, they're brand new to a company. And I said, well, how's it going? And they said, well, it feels like what I'm doing. He didn't say it's like it's cool. But he said, it's like, all I'm kind of doing is like work projects. And I, not even projects, he said, work assignments. And I'm just churning them out. It's like, I'm not really feeling like I'm in a project or in a collaboration. And so it's different, you know, and he wasn't really complaining about it, but he was just noticing that it's different. And I said, yeah, I said, that sounds like what my kid's doing at school. Mm-hmm. And so I was wondering from your perspective, are you noticing that with your clients that it feels like it's more rote and more like, you know, nose to the grindstone, pushing out papers almost. And if you're noticing that, what is it causing? Like, what kind of anxiety could that be causing that we need to look at?
Yes, it is that. Because once you switch it online, that's the default to just become transactional. And because you're, you know, there's a distance. And I say all about your job as a leader on a remote team is to reduce that sense of distance, to resist that sense that I'm just here to demonstrate, you know, to just put in the work and keep it moving.
Produce, yeah.
Yes, and produce.
Yeah.
And if you don't learn, so what it is that you do a series of short little things that when added together creates that sense, reduces that sensation. So, and I mentioned a few before, which is, end meetings, if you have a meeting from 5 to 6, end it at 5:55. You know, give people 5 minutes back to have a break where you can just talk. Or spend the first 1 to 5 minutes just asking and checking in with people. How are you doing? What is your you know, what's going on? Spend meetings explaining to people, you know, where we say establishing certainty, which is, where are we going for the next week? And what your role is in the next week, how you play a role in what we're trying to accomplish. Mm-hmm. So that it's just not a series of disconnected projects you're doing, but while you're doing, you know how they fit into the whole. And so that's the leadership role that you have to fit in, that you know, these little steps start to bring people in. Number three, have some a meeting where you don't talk about work.
Right.
You just talk about, how are you? What are we doing today? And that's where you can really fill in. I was thinking we should start a project where we get together and figure out how we could connect to really, like, you know, recover. That's a sensation with, you know, a great opportunity for that. Where you just have a meeting and it's not about, have you done X? Have you done Y? Where are we are this? Where are we are that?
Right.
You know, and then have your one-on-ones where you start to say to people, how are you really doing? How are you? And it has to relate to a feeling. It cannot be, I am good. Or I am fine.
Right, I'm fine.
You are banned from, and for one-on-ones, not.
Yeah.
Because, you know, people maybe, you don't want people crying in front of, and that has happened. You know, people just break down because somebody has actually asked
about how you're doing. Like, how are you really doing? And then they tell you.
They only want to know how you're doing.
Yeah.
You're like, oh my God, what do you mean? We were, you know, like, I've had clients say, I'm so mortified. Yeah. I didn't know what to do.
But I think people are, I think that's, that there's a lot of going on. So that actually leads into my next question. This is not any of the questions that we gave you to think about. This is something that I was just thinking about. Neither of us are psychologists. So, you know, we have to be careful not to be diagnosing people, clearly. But at the same time, we are definitely much more keenly aware of people's emotionality. And what you just explained, it's like, just asking somebody how they're doing and they break down, clearly they're, you know, not doing well. So what if leader, what do you suggest to leaders who are also not psychologists to recognize when somebody is kind of going down a slippery slope? Like where the anxiety is potentially gonna turn into or has already turned into major burnout, depression. So that at what point, how do you suggest that people, you know, suggest that they go, for example, to talk to HR or talk to EAP or talk to a psychologist, you know, all that. So talk a little bit about what you notice in that situation.
Yeah. So let me start by saying people respond differently, and some people, this COVID situation or some anxiety issue within the workplace hits harder than others. And the first thing as a leader is that you just want to recognize it. As a leader or a colleague, you just want to recognize it. You want the person to understand that some person on this team cares about you. And so I see, are you struggling? Do you need help? And really what your fundamental role there is not to solve the person's problem. It's to hear and validate that they're having a problem, to recognize it, to acknowledge it. Mm-hmm. Some people think, oh my God, I'm just suffering. I'm in the bathroom and people will be, after I'm crying, people will be like, why are you crying? You know, or they had a breakdown and people were very sympathetic on the first day. And then by the third day, we're like, okay, we're over it now. You need to fix this or whatever. So what you want to do is to go in and recognize that you cannot solve their problem. If someone is in a depression, if someone has extreme anxiety, you cannot solve it. All you can do is offer them some support to say to them, we care about you. We recognize that you're dealing with this issue. How can we help? What do you need? So normalize going to see therapists. Normalize getting, emotional and physical or mental health issues. Normalize utilizing the wellness programs in your organization. Normalize that and say it. So what you want to communicate to the person is, I see you. I care about you. You have an issue that I am 100% behind you doing what you need to do to address it. But yeah. What I don't want is for you to go through thinking that you have to suck it up and just
right.
be tough.
Right. And I'm with you totally. I think those are great ideas and getting the support you need. Then we have the problem of them. If they say, yes, I am willing to go, normalizing the idea of going to a therapist, then they got to find one. Because right now it's very hard to do that. I don't know how it is in Pittsburgh, but trying to find a therapist these days is super tough because everybody's trying to do it. Mm-hmm. So therefore, that's another thing in terms of like, as a leader, how do you, if you're noticing that there's issues with people and they want to see a therapist and they're struggling because they can't even find a therapist, you know, using the EAP program, making sure that the companies have proper programs, because going outside and trying to find your own therapist is just really tough right now. So, you know, what are the programs that are within companies? And if there's not, then how do leaders then suggest, highly encourage, demand, you know, that they pump up the wellness programs and pump up the EAP programs.
Yes.
So
I 100% agree with that. The one thing I would insist for leaders, I say this all the time, that we are inherently wise, capable, and smart. We can solve our own problems. You cannot cure some person. And so in that exchange, it is not about you solving their problems or you making them feel better. It is just, as you say, normalizing and saying, you know, okay, they may come back to you and say, I really need a therapist. I can't find one. And you just coaching and saying, okay, what do you think you should, what are the options available to you now? Think about that for a while and just come up with, and you can bounce it off of me. But it is not for you to jump in like, you know, superhero and say, let me find all these, you know,
right.
Yes.
Yeah.
But you can definitely say to your organization, hey, our employees need some more help in this area. So mm-hmm. So I do agree with you on definitely on that.
Great. All right. So again, your website is Sonia Gartside and yes. Your Instagram is Sonia Gartside or Sonia Lane Gartside?
Sonia Gartside.
Okay, so Instagram, I'm going to go to Instagram right now after this and follow you.
Oh, okay, thank you. I'll follow you back. Okay. Anyone who follows me, I'll follow you back.
Okay, I know. So thanks again. I really appreciate you being here. It's great to connect with you this way. This is what's great. So this is the great thing about Zoom is that we can connect eye to eye. And so that I appreciate it very much.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate being here. And thanks for the question, Kathy. I appreciate it.
Yeah. And let me just tell everybody about next time we meet again, we actually take December off. We're going to be starting the year off January 27th at 10 a.m. Pacific with Tim Spiker. He's the author of The Only Leaders Worth Following, Why Some Leaders Succeed, Others Fail, and How the Quality of Our Lives Hangs in the Balance. Next year, we have a theme every year. This year was stress management, essentially. This is before COVID. We knew about COVID, happened to pick stress management as a topic. Next year, we're going to be talking about organization culture. So a lot of the course in the course I was talking with you about, Sonia, were about organization culture. And so we want to continue that conversation, and we'll do that with Tim on January 27th. So since we won't be seeing you guys for a couple of months, I want to wish you a very happy Thanksgiving. Hopefully you're going to be safe and stay at home and not venture too far. And also we're seeing with the holidays around December, whatever you celebrate, I hope that you're able to do that with your close bubble and stay safe. Thanks again, Sonia.
Thanks.
Bye, everybody.
See you guys. Bye.
Gobble, gobble.
Gobble. Bye.